This is Let's Talk Tribe, the official Let's Go Tribe podcast, episode 89, recorded on May 21st, 2018. I'm your host, Matt Lyons, and joining me as always is Let's Go Tribe writer, Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how's it going? Are the Indians fun to watch yet? Is there, are we still in the same miserable little stretch?
I'll be honest, I spent most of the weekend not watching baseball. I was in Chicago for a wedding, so that was much nicer than how the Indians have been recently, although last night seemed at least half good.
Yeah, it was one of those games where if it wasn't like such a weird situation, it would just been kind of a fine loss. But with just the rest of the season all piled up, it isn't quite as fun to watch, really, I don't think.
Right.
Yeah. So what are you doing with another wedding? You just got married. How many do you need in like a month span there?
My wife's sorority sister rudely scheduled her wedding for 3 weeks after hers, ours, which was something else. But I don't know, you know, timing, I guess. It's great. You know, going to someone else's wedding, you don't have to care about anything. You just kind of eat all their food and drink all their beer. It's really the way to do it. I got to say, weddings rule. Mine was wonderful, but other people's are the best one because you have no worries. It's fantastic.
Especially after you have one and you can just sit back and judge theirs and know you're not. You
don't right, have to do and this we judged out. It harshly. Oh, man. Mine was so much better. Are you kidding me?
All right, Merritt. So, so with the Indians, tomorrow they start playing Chicago. They're going to be in Chicago for the first time since this little game called the World Series. Game 5 of the World Series, to be exact. And today we have somebody special to join us. He has a post coming tomorrow, or if you're listening, to the top of the post or on the podcast, it's today. Kind of like a behind-the-scenes oral history kind of thing of the Indians' Twitter account leading up to it. It's Joel Hammond, the former assistant director of communications for the Indians. He ran the Twitter account. He made that 2016 run a lot of fun, so happy to have him with us today. So, hey, Joel.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem.
Merritt, despite losing 2 of 3, I told some people today, I thought the Indians actually acquitted themselves pretty well in Houston this weekend. So,
oh, definitely. Oh,
even
definitely.
Though you, I mean, yeah, even though Kluber, you missed it, I think they played okay.
I mean, yeah, I was keeping track via, you know, game day, went on my phone during the ceremony and all that. So, I mean, from what was going on, it seemed like they were doing great. And, you know, then I don't have ESPN, so I didn't get to watch any of that when I got home from the whole trip. But again, yeah, they seemed like they did very good. I mean, what can you do? Houston kicks ass. I mean,
as you guys know, I mean, in the postseason, you're not going to see Josh Tomlin. You're not going to see Zach McAllister. You're going to see Kluber, Carrasco, Bauer, Clevenger. You're going to see Olsen, Miller, Allen, whatever reliever they add. And then you're going to hopefully score 3 or 4 runs a game and scratch out some wins. So I think the Indians will be fine. I know it's a tough, stretch right now. And I'm now that I'm not employed by the team, I'm as frustrated as any other fan, but you know, you're going to see the best guys in the postseason. I think, you know, Yankees, Astros, Red Sox, the Indians best players line up with those, you know, match up with those teams' best players as well as you could expect.
I think in a 1-to-1 matchup, I think the Indians' rotation, or at least top four, is probably better than the Astros is anyway. The Astros have a great rotation, don't get me wrong, but maybe it's a little bit of bias on my hand. But, you know, I think Kluber's better than Verlander and on down. I think Carrasco's better than whoever their number two guy is and on down the line. So,
yeah. The AL is stacked, though. There's no doubt about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it's ridiculous. It's incredibly top-heavy, even as the NL kind of lists in a weird direction of mediocrity, I guess? I don't know. It's hard to figure out what's going on over there.
So we're going to talk about 2016 in a second. But on the same it's nice that their offense this year feels like it can compete with all those other ones. It feels like the last couple of years it was like one or two players were the big hitters, and now there's a bunch that are really good. On the especially Michael Brantley healthy, Francisco Lindor and Jose Ramirez both MVP candidates. It's nice that the Indians have one of the lineups who can score, like, even if they need more than those 4 or 3 runs in a playoff game, they feel like they can do it really easily.
Waiting for some guys to wake up, too. You know, Alonso, yeah. I know he's going to be good eventually. It's ending on Encarnacion. I think he's going to be good eventually. These guys haven't even woken up yet, so I think they're going to be very good come, you know, June, July.
Yeah, I agree. I think you'll see the Indians add a reliever and add a hitter that can platoon with Kipnis and Alonso. So I think, you know, those platoon advantages are huge, as you know, and I think they're going to add those two pieces, and that will make the team look. You know, I don't think you're going to see Jason Kipnis hitting in the 7th inning against a lefty in the postseason. You know, mm-hmm. I think by October, somebody's going to have had the talk with Jason Kipnis. Like, look, man, sorry, but this is not how it's going to be.
They really need that arm too. Yes, I'm really looking forward to them finding
Yeah.
Literally anything.
That arm could be Mike Clevenger. You know, if they're, especially in a short, in a short series, it's going to be Mike Clevenger. So,
yeah, that is a nice bullpen. I mean, we'll have Ryan Merritt back, who might be okay in the bullpen. I don't know if he's going to be a permanent starter, but at least somewhere in there, like you said, we won't see Josh Tomlin. So that kind of evens things out, I think, in the rotation. So Joel, what we want to happen this year, basically, is a lot of what happened in 2016, maybe not the very end of it. but you were there for the run to the World Series, kind of behind the scenes with the Indians, on the staff running the Twitter account. And you did a lot of, I think that was the first year where I really started to know the Indians. We've talked to you before about this last year, but they really started to get like a voice, and it was a lot of fun that year. And you're going to write a post tomorrow, or you're writing a post that was, that's already pretty much finished there tomorrow. I want to basically start where you started with that, which was July 1st with the Indians winning streak. They had 14 games in a row. You wrote mainly about the 19 inning game. What is it like covering a game that long? Are you just like on edge for 6 hours waiting for a final score? Are you, I mean, is there any break when something big could happen? You have to tweet about it any single moment.
Yeah. Well, in a normal 19 inning game, you just want it to end. And, but that game specifically, by the time, you know, there's a lot at stake there relatively in the middle of a long season where you're trying to, you know, win a franchise record 14th. And, you know, by that time, you know, there's going to be some ramifications, on your roster because of what you had to go through that day. So, you know, once you get deep in that game, you definitely want to win the game. So, and then, you know, just the way it ended and what was, like I said, what the team accomplished. It was a wild day. I write in the post, I won't spoil it all, but, you know, the day was supposed to be pretty routine. It was supposed to be the start of a long weekend, and instead I ended up working pretty much all day long. So that was a fun day. And, you know, one of my coworkers was there, of course, and just, you know, shot us a picture of his scorecard, which was, of course, a disaster. And it was just a fun day, and I'm glad we came out on top. You know, people forget that game, like I said, though, you know, sort of, I think it cost, was it Jabba who lost his job? Anyway, we had the DFA. I think it was Jabba. We had the DFA the day after because we needed a roster spot for Sean Morimoto to come up. So, you know, it was fun to win, but, you know, that kind of set us back a little bit. We didn't play very well, if memory serves, after that game for a few weeks, just because of, you know, what we went through to win it. But of course, you know, the 14 straight, you know, meant something too.
Yeah, I feel like the regular season for them that year was kind of split into like two big, maybe there's more than two, but the two was like biggest defining moments were that and then Tyler Naquin's walk off, which for some reason, when I always think about it without looking it up first, I always picture that as part of the winning streak. But that came like an entire month later. That was a completely different thing.
That was in like August, right?
Yeah. Yeah, August 19th. Yeah.
Yeah. So it was 7 weeks later. And, it, you know, like I said, I'd have to go back and look. But I feel like that stretch, you know, the All-Star break is in there too. But, you know, we didn't play that well for those 6 or 7 weeks. So that's, you know, that Naquin game and that series against the Blue Jays was kind of a real, you know, it was kind of like a second wind of sorts, you know.
I distinctly remember that time. And then after the long winning streak last year, too, is always the Indians won too many games too soon. argument that comes out. They won those finite number of games where you can't possibly win more later on if you have a big winning streak. But
right,
they definitely don't count.
What is the sense around a team that's in a streak like that, too? Because I remember I was in the middle of that. I was moving. I moved from Kentucky to D.C. They were winning, I don't know, probably like June 29th or something. And I think one of those games, and Bauer was pitching, and he's pitching amazingly. And I think to myself, like, they'll never lose again. Like, this team is operating exactly how I expected them always to. And this is just fine. This is normal. What is the sense on the inside then, I suppose, about, I mean, obviously, you know, they're realistic human beings and not, you know, idealistic fans. But what is it like on the inside for that, I guess, by long-winded way of saying that.
Yeah, I mean, I think in 2016 it was a little bit different because we hadn't gone through it first. So I think then it was a little bit easier to get caught up in it. Mm-hmm. You know, for the players, maybe not that they did, but you know, I think they talked about it a little bit more. And then, you know, as a staff, as somebody who works for the team, it's you know, of course, more fun to go to work and a lot more excitement. Last year, I think the players did a really good job of not really focusing on that much. I know it sounds like cliche, but you know, they spoke every day of, look, we're just trying to win today. And now from our perspective, what I challenged my group was, you know, especially in the 22 gamer after we had the 14 gamer, it was like, hey, this is our time to shine. So how can we get creative? How can we, you know, keep this going on social? And so, you know, I think the players did a good job of sort of not focusing on it too much. From my perspective, it was cool. You know, it was super exciting. And we had so much stuff, you know, to talk about and to write about and to execute. It was awesome. So we had a lot of fun with it.
And so one of my favorite, go ahead, Matt.
I was curious just in general about the GIF making you guys do. I mean, you have so many. How many would you say? No, actually, what is the process of making one? It seems like there's such a quick turnaround sometimes. How big is it? Was the team you guys worked with? Because the speed with which things came out, or even just, you know, the creativity of it all was always, it's always been amazing, especially with the Cleveland Indians kind of account.
It was a unique setup. I mean, there were just a couple of us that were sort of doing the day-to-day, the hour-to-hour sort of execution, but we had a great team behind us where we had great photographers, we had a great production team, you know, at the Indians. And then it's kind of a unique setup because, you know, technically Major League Baseball Advanced Media owns every club's website and social media channels. Now, they're much more hands-off now, or when I left, than they were when I first started. But so technically they own our stuff. They own the footage. They own everything. So as you guys know, there's been a lot of controversy around them and what they do with, you know, the people who were stealing or creating their own gifts, whatever. But so they would actually create our gifts for us, and they were good about turning around. So, yeah, it was a unique setup. And so like the game action stuff, Major League Baseball Advanced Media would send us some of the other stuff, you know, we'd create in-house. I'm trying to think of an example, but, you know, like the ones in my last year that were kind of like on a black background, they kind of looked like they were shot on a green screen. Like that's our creative team, our production team that shot those in spring training. And then, you know, like game action, we would get sent to us by MLB. So.
Okay. I've always been kind of curious about just the process of it all. Cause you know, I got to make my own gifts, or maybe I don't. Legally.
Yeah, I remember on the subject of like stealing them. I was when Jason Kipnis and I forgot who it was, they had their little handshake in the dugout the other night, like a couple weeks ago, whatever you want to call that. I made a gift for that and posted it, and I thought I wonder if this is gonna be the one that gets our account banned, if that's if that's the one.
Well, they just you know, that controversial approach that they have was just rekindled, as you guys probably sure saw with Pitching Ninja. And I don't know, Jeff Passan wrote that, you know, MLB told him that they were going to start relaxing that stance a little bit. I mean, I get it, but then I also see what Twitter and NBA Twitter does for their game. And it's like, man, how can you argue against the results that you know, the NBA's approach gets for them? So I understand MLB's approach with it. But it's hard to argue with, you know, the success that the NBA sees from kind of taking a hands-off approach.
And that Pitching Ninja account is super cool too. I love it. I mean, I was so bad when that happened. Anyway.
So one of my favorite things in this entire post, I think, there's a lot of great stuff, but it's the section where you say, if you ever see Tom Hamilton sprinting out of the ballpark, it's likely a fireworks night. You said he records his post-game stuff in record time so he can get moving. Just the idea of Tom Hamilton like sprinting out of the stadium is great to me.
He does.
David, you said you were like, he literally records it and then like power walks out as fast as he can.
He does. And that's not uncommon. I mean, you know, you're there all day and, you know, the last thing you want to do is sit in traffic after the game. I mean, the best, you know, when I first started the Indians in 2013, I actually lived like a block from the ballpark, and it was awesome. I didn't have to wait. I could, you know, I could leave whenever I wanted. I didn't have to wait for traffic. And I mean, just waiting for traffic after the game clear is over is terrible. So, you know, like Arch and Matt from STO and their staff, and then Hammy, you know, they do they're pros by now. They try to get out of there as soon as they can. Now, what's funny is this year it's going to be even worse, which I think I wrote in there because, you know, the queue construction has Huron all messed up. Well, after fireworks show, you can't go out Bolivar. They have to let it clear. So you have to go out Huron. So it's just going to be a disaster. So my PSA to Indians fans listening this year, if you're going on a fireworks night, either plan to stay an hour and a half after or leave in the ninth inning, because otherwise you're up the creek.
Now I got to call you out real quick, Joel. Okay. On the walk-off game, you said they were down a run and you were going to beat traffic. But you heard the call going down the elevator and then you had to go back up.
Well, Matt.
come on, Joel. A run?
The baseball season is long. The baseball season is very long. And in mid to late August, those are truly the dog days. And so I think at that point, I write in the post that, my son was about 4 months old and I probably wasn't sleeping a lot at that point. I may have gone in early that day for morning TV. I don't remember that specifically, but yes, I admit I was trying to beat the traffic on a Friday night in a 2-1 game. And I got in the elevator and Jose Ramirez, which a lot of people forget that homer, but that homer was huge to tie that game. And he hits that. I probably mutter the F word under my breath about 5 times and hustle back to the press box, open my laptop back up. And it's like as soon as I'm logged in and I have Twitter open, Naquin makes contact. And then I'm like, it's a mad scramble to find what I'm doing. So that was one of the more memorable experiences I've had there. It's a fun story to tell for sure.
You know, between that and the description of Hamilton just sprinting to his car, you're really ruining the magic we all have in our heads of being able to work in baseball and how, no, this is just a job. And it's, I get it, but at the same time,
you're supposed to come in twirling your hats and so excited to work for baseball.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so there you see the sort of juxtaposition of why it's so exciting and why it's also so tough to work in the sport, right? Where you've been there all hours of the day, every day, and you're tired and you want to get home to your family, but then something awesome happens and you are happy to stay an extra 3 hours. So that was kind of like, that's what was the trade-off that I thought about when I was, making the decision to leave. It's like, well, family or this, and at some point, your home life and your work life balance has to win out. But it was a tough decision, and that's a perfect example. That night's a perfect example of why that decision was so tough.
Mm-hmm. So I want to jump ahead to what's affectionately known as the day the Indians' postseason dreams ended before they began, which it's been 2 years, but that is still a legendary post in like Cleveland lore. I think it's the day that Paul Hoynes officially wrote off the Indians with like a little less than a month of the season to go. Clearly that didn't work out for him, but what was it like just waking up and seeing that after you say you've been through the dog days of playing, the players have been through it, and then they wake up and just see that one of the most popular beat writers has just basically called them dead when they're still in the mix of everything.
Yeah, I mean, it was frustrating, especially because it came after such a galvanizing win, for the players after Cookie got hit. And to see that, I remember texting our department text thread and, probably swearing some more. And when I got to the ballpark, ran into Kipnis and I said, "Hey, have you seen this?" And he said, "I sure have." And so I kind of got the sense at that point that this was going to be something that the guys rallied around. I think there was probably some regrets all around where, I don't think a couple of the players handled it quite as well as they could have. But I mean, I'm also sensitive to the fact that they just had a great win. They've had a ton of ups and downs this season, and they're in position to win the first division crown in 9 years. And my approach always was, why don't you give these guys a chance to, they've done it all year long. Why don't you give them another chance to prove that they can get through this, which we of course did. So I understood the frustration, and it was fun to see them, rally around that. So and Paul, I mean, I think I took actually out of the post, so this is a podcast exclusive, but Paul was, who is a very, 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 very good person, was a very frustrating person to deal with from a PR standpoint, because he writes as a fan. He doesn't write as a journalist who attempts to get every side of every story out. He writes as a fan, and you can see that in his tweets, which are incendiary and don't paint the whole picture, and very frustrating to deal with Paul, despite his being a very, very good person, which I can't stress enough. So that was just another example of that. And, it was a sort of poetic that it came back on him and he faced some backlash. I mean, I think most of the backlash was good natured. I'm sure he faced some not good natured stuff, but from our perspective, it was fun to sort of see him handle that and see it come back on him a little bit.
If I remember it, he was one of the ones getting sprayed at after some celebration, right? I think it was Jason Kidd just like put his arm. Yeah.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, I believe there was a lot of, I think there was a, which was kind of funny. And although I don't think it was quite appropriate, but I believe there was a, an F Paul Hoynes chant in the locker room in either in Detroit or Boston or Toronto or one of those places. So a little unfortunate, but funny nonetheless.
So how many of those tweets that come back, either whether it's from Paul Hoynes or just anything you guys put out, how many of those do you actually see? I noticed you know a couple times in your post that the replies to a particular tweet are pretty great. I mean, do you sit and see pretty much all of them, or how do you sort which ones are worth responding to or what even seeing? Because our Twitter account is obviously not anywhere near as big as yours, but if we have a semi-popular tweet, it's pretty hard to follow like what comments are coming in where. So I just want to know what it's like for such a bigger account.
Yeah, we definitely had eyes on the replies and our mentions at all times. I mean, once the postseason started, it caught me a little off guard about how intense it was. So it was more difficult then. But, you know, we definitely had our pulse on what people were talking about. And, you know, especially when we sent something like a few of those examples I put in there where we were, you know, calling somebody out, like the guy from Boston or you know, putting something out about the Blue Jays and the circumstance and all that. We definitely kept our eyes on those just to see how they were being received. And in most cases, you know, they were received pretty well.
How much oversight did you have in your day to day, I guess? Because, I mean, you know, at times there's some sass you guys kind of slang around there. So how much did anyone really care that much as long as you were, you know, driving attention and at least somewhat positive, you know, attention to the club?
Yeah, we had a lot of autonomy, which was one of my favorite parts of working there. And, you know, I always said that, you know, it was our job to know. And I believe this for, you know, anybody running a team social account to know where the line is. And, you know, I was involved, you know, I wrote press releases and wrote messaging. And so I was involved with those processes. So I kind of knew the response that we wanted to get out. You know, it wasn't always appropriate to respond with internal messaging, whatever, but, you know, we were involved with all those processes anyway. So it was on us to know where the line was and if we were getting close and if we were getting close to run up the flagpole. But, you know, we were, you know, I always said, and I always tell people who are running accounts, like, you need to know what your fans are talking about and be a part of the conversation. That's what we tried to do. So we knew people were going to be talking about Justin Verlander accusing us of stealing signs. We knew people were going to be talking about Paul Hoynes' thing. We knew people were going to be talking about, oh, I don't know, Master Donato's thing about the crowd and the poor town. So we, you know, we wanted to be a part of those conversations.
Yeah, that's the next thing I want to touch on is I didn't realize this. I mean, I saw the Jason Mastronato tweet you're talking about is David Ortiz flies out, and by the sound of it, you think the Indians just won the World Series. Poor town. That was his tweet. I remember that. I remember your response of the salt truck, which is pretty great. I mean, that just fed into Cleveland's their us against the world mentality. I mean, it's everything wrong about watching baseball. You can't celebrate in the postseason with your team making a big out. So I was really glad to see you guys sort of go after him. And then I guess behind the scenes, it got really weird. Evan Drellich came to you personally and tried to call you out on Twitter. What was that whole thing like?
Weeks later, too, huh?
Yeah, that was during the World Series. We mentioned Jason again during the World Series, and I think that's what set Evan off. And I got a text from the press box during the World Series that, hey, I'm sitting behind Evan Drellich, and he's looking at your personal Twitter account. And he dug up tweets. He dug up tweets of mine from when I worked at Cranes, like critical tweets of Mark Shapiro when I worked at Cranes, which before I even started with the Indians, which got real weird. And so, yeah, very weird. But, you know, I thought that tweet from the Boston writer was just indicative of like how little respect we had and our team had, and, you know, kind of Boston's like, hey, we're too good for you. Like, how could you possibly find fault in a crowd like in a big moment in the first inning of our first playoff game in a couple of years? Like I just had a hard time understanding where that came from. So yeah, we got after him real good and continued a little bit. And I, you know, frankly, I don't have any regrets about that, because I thought that was fair game. Like, if you're going to take that shot at town, he kind of doubled down, I think, with another one, his other tweet after that. So to me, that was fair game. If you're gonna send that out, you better expect some blowback. So I don't regret anything about that exchange at all.
Yeah, your initial response, I think it was either after or before the salt track, or no, it was definitely after. It was Jason, was the crowd reaction acceptable on those two home runs? It's just calm and murderous.
If you remember that, I think we hit three home runs in the same inning. No, I think we hit one and then two more in another inning. But his tweet was calm down Cleveland fans or something like that. And like I said, double down. So we kept it up, and that was fun. That was ironically, I sat real close to him in the press box at Fenway, and he didn't have much to say face to face. Neither did Evan. So it was kind of funny. Like, hey man, I'm just sitting right down here. Come on down. So funny how Twitter works.
Let's look at my old tweets together. Why don't we?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, that was. Yeah, yeah. Come on down. I'll show you what I tweeted when I didn't work for the Indians.
The other thing he did was feed into the Indian sign stealing thing, which I guess that sort of started with the Tigers and then bled over to the Red Sox and the ALDS.
Oh, it definitely started with the Tigers. I mean, let's not mince words here, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that was just went back again to like that whole season. It was just like, and I don't really like the whole Cleveland versus the world thing, but it was kind of like, nobody was giving us credit for playing well and doing what we needed to do. So Master Donato sort of hid behind, hey, I just asked the question, these guys said it, but you know, you could tell that there was some fishing there. So wrote a story about sign stealing again. So we had the last laugh there again with our last tweet from Fenway. So those were things that kind of, I think, fed into, you know, the Indians are, you know, they're fun and that sort of thing. And actually, it's funny. We were in the clubhouse, champagne everywhere. I'm soaking wet. It was kind of chilly that night. If I remember game three in Boston, it was like 55 degrees, but I'm like soaking wet in shorts and a long sleeve t-shirt. And I didn't know if I was allowed to go out on the field at that point, but I said, forget it. I had my credential. I ran out to left field in Fenway and snapped a picture of the scoreboard on the monster and sent out that tweet, which was one of my favorites. So and that was then we went and partied, you know. It was fun that night.
And that tweet, for anyone listening, was couldn't steal this sign, so I just took a picture of it, which is just the final score of the game, which is great.
Yeah, that was a pretty good mic drop on that one.
The ALCS, the Indians are already pretty, I mean, they're pretty strapped. They don't have Carlos Carrasco, Michael Brantley. I mean, who else at that point? There's a few other you tweeted specifically, but they're pretty shorthanded.
And then Danny Trevor Bauer, yeah.
Yeah, and Trevor Bauer goes and sticks his finger in a drone, and it gets cut. Yep. What, I mean, again, just what is that like? You said, who was it that came and talked to you right away? Bart Swain, I think?
Yeah.
So is there any kind of direction, like, you need to address this, you don't need to, or?
We did not address that from our account. We just sort of tweeted out the news that Trev would be pushed back and JT would start game two. And it didn't take long for the real, one of the national guys had it first. And, after that, it was just like that day was kind of a cluster, which we expected. I mean, what are you going to say? Look, the guy screwed up and cut his finger. And what are you going to say? I mean, I don't think Trevor got enough credit for pitching game three, for trying to pitch through it. When do you guys remember this? Like we had a road game watch party at B-Dubs downtown. So we were there watching, and we're up 2-0, and it's kind of fun, but it's also a little bit nerve wracking because you don't know what to expect. And like, do you remember when they first cut to his finger on the shot?
Oh,
the
yeah. Broadcast? It was dripping blood. Yeah.
Like, it was disgusting. And no, we're all really just was. Like, what on earth is going on here? And he tried to pitch through it.
Yeah. I love how he's hiding it. Yeah. He's hiding it from the umpire. I'm like, it's fine. No,
well,
it's good.
It's funny you say that, because if you know anything about Bauer, Bauer's the only guy who doesn't wear the blues all the time, right? He wears whites at home and he wears grays on the road. Mm-hmm. Well, he wore blue that day. And why did he wear blue that day?
That's brilliant.
So the blood would not show up on the gray uniform. Now, of course, it got a lot worse than I think anybody expected, and it went on his pants, but he wore blue that day in case he needed to wipe his finger on his jersey.
And I think his biggest problem with that afterwards was that he couldn't use the like the glue to keep it shut, which probably would have worked, but he wasn't allowed because of a foreign substance, and that kind of led into this whole Astros thing going on this year.
Right, that's been his biggest beef with the Astros this year, is that he wasn't allowed to do that, and he doesn't use pine tar supposedly. And so he wants either everybody to be able to use stuff or nobody to be able to use stuff. So it's funny how that's come full circle.
Now, I want to back up a minute here with the uniform thing. I even asked Francisco Lindor about this. He didn't know, obviously, or maybe didn't tell me. But do you know why the Indians use the blue so much? Is it just a preference or like superstition?
No, I think it's just starting pitchers' preference. There's been a little bit more. Like, Kluber just wore the grays on the road, I feel like, didn't he?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, there's been a lot more grays on the road. There wasn't, for like the first month and a half, there wasn't a single gray on
the road. But. And then somebody picked the might have been Tomlin. I tweeted out the one Sunday, or the last time Tomlin started at home, you know, they wore the home whites with that red block C cap, which I thought looked awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it's just starting pitchers choose them, and I don't know if during the playoffs that year they were just, you know, they all wanted to wear blue because it was working. But yeah, starting pitchers choose them.
Yeah, it didn't seem like I thought it started during that postseason. I thought maybe that's kind of just kept going on, but maybe just
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So did none of the starting pitchers like the red throwback uniforms? Is what you're telling me?
Well,
I loved those, and I'm wanting them all the time.
Well, unless that's like an official alternate uniform, I've heard somebody told me that caught like that one Sunday or Saturday summer. I think we wore them against the Royals, and they wore their powder blues or whatever. But like, yeah. I think that's like super expensive to do that one off like that. I think it costs like $50,000 or something like that to do that somehow. Because I think what happens is you have to. If you're hosting a throwback night at your ballpark, you have to pay for the road team's uniforms also.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize it was that big of a – I think it was just – I don't know. I mean,
right.
Multi-billion-dollar year industry. I'm like, whatever. You know, but right. I mean, at the same time, like, that's a couple salaries right there, I suppose. So
I don't know if – you know, I don't know where they're going with alternate uniforms next year. I know, like, if they are rolling out a new alternate uniform, it would have had to be submitted to MLB by now. So, you know – you know, I don't know that information, and I truthfully wouldn't tell you if I did, so I wouldn't violate my NDA. But yeah. So anyway, to do it one off like that, I've been told that's like super expensive.
So that puts a new perspective on the whole Chris Sale thing a couple years ago. I mean, he cut up a lot of money.
I wonder if he paid that tab since he cut him up.
I would think they'd at least try to make him do it, but
right.
So in the World Series itself, I mean, I've had colds before, and I've had to stop doing very menial jobs because of it. Meanwhile, you were running a Twitter account, being a parent, and following a World Series for 3 games. How much of games 3, 4, and 5 do you really remember, or was it all just a blur of NyQuil and DayQuil and whatever you had?
Well, you know, it's funny. I got sick during the ALCS, and then, of course, we had a little bit of a break, which is good, but... Our baby wasn't sleeping very well, so I wasn't sleeping well, so I couldn't get better. It's funny, when I went to Chicago, that's when I started to feel better, because what I did was I just stayed in my hotel bed and slept until we had to go to Wrigley. It was the first time in like 2 weeks that I'd been able to sleep. So that was good, but it was kind of a bummer. I missed the World Series gala, and I missed a few other things, but I was just so sick that I had to try to get some rest. But It was just crazy. You know, I mean, I think I wrote in the piece that, so the team left after game two. Let's see, the game two would have been Wednesday. So the team goes to Chicago that night, has an off day and a workout on Thursday. I actually, which I write in here, Paul Dolan, chartered 2 planes for all of our staff and guests to go to either game 3 or game 4. So I actually flew with my coworkers on a private charter on Friday morning for game 3, went to Wrigley. You know, that was the day that long rumored Carlos Santana, you know, so we had stuff to do. We wanted to get that out before anybody else had it. And so, you know, the auxiliary press box at Wrigley was up in the left field upper deck. It was cold. It was windy. It was miserable. You know, the auxiliary press box at Progressive Field was in the kids' clubhouse. So we had a really cool setup for visiting media. And in Wrigley, actually, I think game three, I sat up there and it wasn't that cold that game. And luckily, my boss gave up his seat in the main box for game four and game five because I was sick and it was getting cold. So it was just kind of a whirlwind, you know?
So, Joe, I did have one question for you, actually. Sure. I wanted to run it back. All right. So the Indians wore the Wahoo basically the entire postseason, right?
Yep.
And they're getting rid of it, obviously, for obvious reasons.
Yep.
Was there any pushback at all from, like, the league? Or did you – I mean, obviously, maybe you weren't involved with it, really, but maybe tangentially, anything you heard anywhere, but, like, the league office saying, could you not? Or – because, like you said, the pitcher's pick, and because that was something that was mentioned on Twitter by a bunch of different people. So
yeah,
I have to ask.
Yeah, I mean, make no mistake, Rob Manfred does not like the logo, and so I'm sure he cringed every time we wore it. But I don't think the league at that point was in any position to sort of say you can't do this. You know, the craziest thing regarding Wahoo was, you know, the whole Canadian thing where, you know, our clubbies were in Toronto preparing to rip the patches off the sleeves if that tribunal ruled in favor of those groups that didn't want us to wear it.
That's crazy.
You know, I think that ruling came down at like 4 o'clock the day of the game. And so they were getting ready to scramble to make that work. And so that was messy. And I think I wrote in there that, that was my biggest issue with Wahoo was it took away that year from our really good team. And frankly, in 2017, it took away from our really good team in the playoffs. I mean, that's what people wanted to talk about that instead of, you know, some people, not everybody, but anything that was my biggest gripe with it was anything that took away from people talking about our team should have been eliminated, you know, at the same time. And people kill the Indians for this. And there's very real financial considerations when you talk about something that a fan base, your paying customers, are tied to, you know? And so that was always the consideration. And so I'm happy he's going away. I hated that during those two seasons, our two big years there, that if one person talked about Wahoo instead of our really good team, then that was one person too many. You know, that was my biggest gripe with it.
No, I agree with you there. I mean, every time you see any highlight of them on, you know, on Twitter anywhere, at least someone's going to pop up in the comments talking only about the logo, not about the 22 game win streak or what have you, you know? So no, okay.
And even on the next level of that, there was always like those slow zoom ins on people who were dressed up and everything in the World Series.
I agree with that completely, Matt. That was always my biggest fear when the team was announcing that it was getting rid of it. And it was drawing more people like that to the ballpark. Like, whether you like it or not, people are passionate about it. And I was concerned that those crazy people that dress up like that, I am frankly still concerned if they're in the postseason this year, given the spotlight on that, that more people will do that. And so I advocated for there to be some sort of policy at the ballpark that you essentially couldn't dress up, whether that was like that, whether it was like Chewbacca, you couldn't come to the ballpark with a costume on. Now that's a little sticky when your uniforms still have the logo on it. Like, you can't really tell people you can't wear it to the ballpark if the team is still wearing it. So they're in a little bit of a sticky situation, I feel like, this year. And I just hope that Clevelanders don't do that anymore because it makes us all look bad.
So I've heard people suggest that, but my thing for that has always been, like, just telling people that is going to cause such a huge backlash outside of the stadium and everything. Would it be better just to let the few people who are going to do it for a couple of years, and then it'll be kind of fade out on its own when the logo is not there anymore?
You could be right. I mean, I was just always concerned that, given the passion that we always saw on the topic, that like that would draw more of those of the really passionate supporters out in that and make us look even worse during the playoffs, you know? So it'll be interesting to see what happens this playoff. Did you see, I mean, you guys probably saw the opening day video that Cleveland.com did of people yelling obscenities at the Wahoo protesters. Like, it's just like, get over it. You know, like that makes us all look bad. Don't do that. Don't do that. You know?
Yeah.
So it was always just an awkward position to be in. And, I'm glad they've, they're cutting ties with it on the uniform at least.
Yeah.
So let's get to my least favorite part of your article. The entire World Series, it turns out. What? I mean, yeah, obviously you follow the team all year. ALCS, ALDS, all that. What was the biggest change in terms of just in general the media, but in particular just being a social media presence of a World Series team as opposed to just, you know, it's August 15th and you're just tweeting or, you know, you're tweeting stuff out about this or that. What was the biggest change, would you say? Was there anything? I mean, obviously you said you were super sick, but
it just intensified, you know. I mean, it was, you know, your mentions and your comments were manageable during the regular season. I mean, once you got to the postseason, I mean, we had two people with our eyes on it constantly to make sure we were, you know, keeping up with everything and knowing what was going on, knowing what people were talking about. So it was just super intense. And, but it was fun, you know. I mean, it was awesome. And we got a lot of great, publicity for our team, which I loved. It was a chance to brag on, the people I work with directly. And I think I mentioned them, but like, you know, we had a great intern group that year. You know, we had two great photographers and our creative staff did a great job. And, you know, we rolled out that Rally Together thing for the first time. I know you guys talked about whether it's old hat by now, but you know, then it was perfect timing and it worked really well. So we had a lot of great people involved then. So, it was a great chance to tell the organization story, to tell the social team story, and to get people talking about the good stuff that we were doing. So it was a lot of fun.
Did you feel like you were battling uphill at all? Because on the other side of it was, you know, the greatest curse in baseball history and all that stuff, and trying to, I don't know, garner attention, or did you just not worry about that really?
That's a great question. You know, I didn't worry about that all that much. Although, you know, when you talk about knowing what your fans are discussing,
yeah,
you know, we were very keenly aware that there was a perception out there that the national media were not giving us a whole lot of love. Now, having said that, I think Clevelanders have that sort of chip on their shoulder generally. You know, like when you look on Twitter, like during these Cavs games, like I think that's like just a Clevelander syndrome, you know, like, and I didn't really, I mean, we were in the free world freaking series. Like there was enough attention for us, you know, but we knew that there was a perception that Joe Buck loves. So great question and great application to what we did. So we knew that our fans were talking about Joe Buck's love for the Cubs.
And Schwarber in particular.
And Kyle Schwarber. So we used that to our advantage on Twitter and you know, asked MLB, they posted about Schwarber one time, and I think our reply was, "Does Joe Buck run this account?" So it's a great look into like how we worked. We knew what our fans were talking about. How can we apply it to what we're doing? And so, like I said, kind of a good peek at how we applied the conversation to what we were up to.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's a big difference between a lot of teams that are either just like robotic, spitting out news, or just trying general, like not trends of their fans, but just general trends on the internet, trying to cash in on it and make it relatable.
Yeah, man, you guys memed really well. I'll say that much.
That's a very quick way to say what I said. Yeah. And then the last thing, I don't want to spoil what it is because I think it's kind of neat that it's in the post. And you said that only your son knew it for this long, but you did have a tweet ready for if the Indians won the World Series. Like how hard was it knowing you had that ready, and how close were you to, I mean, I guess posting it, was it already ready to go and you ran it by some people or?
So yeah, I don't want to spoil it. People got to click, got to give you guys some clicks and got to give some traffic. So, you know, we went through, we had some visuals ready to go and we had our copy ready to go. We ran it through the team and we were ready to go as soon as, you know, Carlos Santana had a walk off in the ninth, which never happened. So, you know, you plan for that. When we planned in like July, our division clinching stuff, and we had great content and great copy, and we had a good plan. I had, you know, I mentioned in the post that we, you know, had a life proof case because we were going, you know, we got approval to go in the clubhouse and we knew we were going to get sprayed, and, you know, it's a lot of planning. And, you know, we were lucky that a lot of our plans got to see the light of the day because our team performed so well. Unfortunately, just that last little bit didn't get to see the light of day. So it'll finally see the light of day on Tuesday on Let's Go Tribe.
Yeah,
it's very bold of you to play in a division clinching comment in the middle of July, I have to say. But there were 7.5 games.
It was more, I guess that was more like,
no, I know, just,
you know, yeah, like visuals and that sort of thing. But, sure, you know, we waffled a little bit. And frankly, I'm still a little uneasy about putting our, you know, the copy for the World Series out there, just because I'm sure we would have gotten a little bit of blowback that we sort of, you know, piggybacked off something that wasn't ours and that sort of thing. But, you know, I mean, you guys saw it. The post is a great recap of like some of the like sarcastic and you know, snarky stuff we did. And I thought, you know, our plan for the clinching copy fit right in. You know, it was just sort of like a natural progression, fit right in with that voice where it was like one last shot across the bow, you know? So I'll be interested to see what people have to say about it tomorrow, whether they would have liked it, would have hated it.
Yeah. Oh, I lied. I have one more thing. You sent me the pictures of the World Series ring. I know you, yes, have two kids now, Joel. Who gets that, yes, ring? Who's that going in the will to?
I mean, heck, at this point,
saw it in half.
You know, Matt knows. Merritt just got married, so at this point, I'll probably have to pawn it to pay for diaper bills and formula bills for my kids.
That'll cover you for a couple kids. Months.
Yeah, so I'm not sure that it's ever going to make it to the will. It's probably going to be pawned before then to pay for some formula bills.
I could see someone in like 2030 frantically searching Joel Hammond fan graphs. Who was this guy?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Joel. Well, thank you again for coming on, talking to us, for writing this whole post, of course. It's really great. I'm really glad you're able to do this, and I think it was Matt Schlichting mentioned it too. Whoever else did, thank you for bringing that up and just writing the whole thing.
You got it, guys. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
No problem.
Thanks for coming on.
We're going to take a really quick break, and then we'll be back, hopefully take maybe time for one or two questions. I feel bad to not do any of them, so stick around. We'll be right back. And we're back. Thank you again, Joel, for joining us for that conversation. That whole post, I'm really excited about. I know I just said it a minute ago to him, but it's going to be really neat. I'm glad
it's a good read.
Yeah. So, Merritt, we did get some questions. I mean, we got a lot of them this time, and I feel bad we're going to miss out so many of them, but I do want to at least get a couple that I think are good here.
I mean, I'm sure some of them are evergreen is a thing, so we have that going for us at least.
Trying to see. I guess what level of confidence do you have Melky Cabrera's evergreen? I can answer that any time of the year. It's... full confidence in that cannon of an arm that he has, apparently.
I actually have a much more complex answer to that. Because when was the last time he was really good, I guess, is the real question. I mean, what do we expect out of Melky? What is confidence in Melky Cabrera, right? Is it a literal league average bat?
I mean, yeah. Perhaps. That's like what he's been the whole time.
That's basically what he has been his whole career.
Yep.
Maybe a little bit more. I don't know. I mean... You know, is he 33 years old now? Does he want to play baseball that much longer? I don't know. Maybe he'll suddenly become some sort of weird, not weird, it's normal now, but like a huge fly ball advocate and just over the next, you know, 5 months, mash 38 home runs for the Indians. What did we find here? Gold, apparently. There's gold in them Dar Hills.
So this kind of leads...
He was so good years ago, you know?
He had that year with the Giants when he was just insane.
Well, he was on steroids.
Yeah. Oh, well, yeah. I mean, you know, he's really good, though. I forgot about that. And then he suddenly plays a lot less games next year with the Blue Jays. That's weird. It's a weird coincidence there.
Things happen, you know? What can you do? What can you do about the vagaries of luck, I suppose, is how I would explain that.
So this leads nicely to our next question from David J. Fabian. He wants to know, in your opinion, should all our outfielders get healthy? Who stays and who goes? Because, I mean, right now, if you count the disabled list, there is just a boatload of...
17 outfielders, I believe it is, right?
Conservatively, yeah, 17. Somewhere in there.
I mean, I think the answer, obviously, is, and I don't think I'm wrong in saying this, but obviously it's Brantley, Zimmer, and Chisenhall. And then I guess Guyer. And then what, do you get a fifth outfielder?
Wait, so who do you have so far? Chisenhall, Brantley...
And Zimmer.
And Zimmer. Yeah, I don't think they're going anywhere. And then Guyer...
Well, how many outfielders are we talking? How many outfielders should the team have? Five, right? I guess that's a number. That's a good number.
I guess so. Is Rajai Davis that, or is Greg Allen? I'd take Greg Allen.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know, man. What about Tyler Naquin at this point? I've written articles for and against him so many different times. I don't even know how I feel about him anymore. So Davis just can't hit at all. And that's true. I mean, if you have Zimmer already, and we're assuming full health, obviously, then you have someone who is a better outfielder and is faster somehow than Rajai Davis. Davis has the knack for stealing bases, but I think that if I had to pick one of the two, I'd take Zimmer, and then I don't know. I mean, I guess for a pinch runner situation, obviously you go with Davis over Allen, only because he has, again, I think stealing bases is there's technique as much as there is speed in it. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think Ricky Henderson was only really fast. Towards the end of his career, he was still stealing like 60 bases a year. What did I say? Did I say Melky Cabrera?
What?
I said Ricky Henderson there, right? Yeah, I said Ricky Henderson. Okay. Jesus.
Okay. Blacking out for a minute.
Whoa. Rambling. But I think there's some skill in that, and I think Davis does have that skill. It's just he has limited other skills. So
yeah, I think there's some rosters that could. Yeah, there's some rosters that could keep Rajai Davis on just for a pinch runner, but I don't think the Indians, when they have to platoon two outfield spots, can be one of those.
Well, I don't think they platoon two outfield spots, though. I think they'd only platoon one. I remain firm in my belief that Bradley Zimmer is an everyday center fielder, even if he only hits 240.
Oh, I firmly believe that. I don't believe it's going to happen, though.
I don't understand why, though. I mean, defense, if everyone else is hitting, if your right field spot is performing at a, give it a 120 WRC plus, and then you have Brantley fully healthy, you don't need a great center fielder that can hit. And so, and I'm sure the team knows that. He's there for his defense more than anything, and the bat will show up eventually. I mean, it's got, you know, it's one of the reasons he is a major leaguer. It's not just the glove. So I do think that will happen. And so I don't think you need to platoon center field again if he's healthy.
Yeah, but I am fully with you. I hate platooning Bradley Zimmer. I hated it even last year. I mean, if you don't believe in him enough as half or as a full time player, you probably don't believe in him enough as a platoon bat. He didn't have huge splits throughout his career. He did a little bit in the higher ends, but he does not need to be platoon. And like you said, his defense is the most important thing. If he's hitting really bad against lefties, you can keep him out there for the defensive boost.
Like, I'm pretty sure he just hasn't ever hit. That's the thing. It's not right. He hasn't hit this or that. He's just his entire time in the majors, just been a bad hitter. So that's whatever. I mean, if that's who he is right now, it's not like he's old. He's 25 years old, and he's only played 133 games in the majors. I don't think I think it's a bit too early to make a judgment on that. But even if it isn't, if he's batting eighth or ninth, and you have two MVP candidates on the infield, and they're small dudes, and we already mentioned the large sluggers that you have, like, I think that's something you can get over, and it helps the key to the entire team, which is the pitching staff. So that's my five anyways.
So let's wrap it up with a question from @KevinGammon. He wants to know, is the team strategy to survive the weak AL Central until the trade deadline and then try to bolster the bullpen? It would explain why they did so little to add to the pen after Shaw and Smith left. I don't think you go into a season thinking we're going to win the division, so who cares? But yeah, sort of. At this point, I guess they're not going to make a trade in May no matter what. But I guess, yeah, they're just going to try to survive in the weak division and get some of the deadline.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why. I don't know why trades don't happen in May. I mean, for the most part, I get it sometimes. But, like, there's teams you know are out of it. Like, for instance, I don't know why Machado hasn't been traded already.
Well, he should have traded before the season, so.
Oh, he should have been traded a year and a half ago. But whatever, you know, like, you trade him now because you can get at least, you know, one more mid-level prospect. But as to their plan for it, no, again, that's something you can really plan for, because if that is a way the Indians actually think, then that's absurd, because then you get bit in the ass by, I don't know, the Twins of the early 2000s or something like that, or the mid-2000s, suddenly becoming pretty good.
Or the Twins of 2018. I still don't understand why everybody just assumes the Twins are part of the garbage pile in the AL Central. They're not. They were a playoff team last good. Year.
Yeah, no, yeah. Exactly. And, like, they have a bunch of young talent, and they added more talent. Yeah, they lost their catcher, who's Castro, who's, again, vital to the development of young pitchers like Jose Barrios. But still, it's a danger. Even I was looking at records, the Tigers are not as far out of it as I thought they would.
Are we
be.
Really worried about the Tigers, though? Well, I'm going to no, regret saying I, that if they come back but somehow. But
and like the Indians are 22 and 23, which is embarrassing. I tried to commiserate with a friend of mine who's a Mariners fan at the wedding I was at.
You cannot commiserate.
And she would have Mariners. None of it. She was like, "Yeah, whatever. Why do you lead a division with a losing record?" I was like, "Oh, the groom is a White Sox fan." I was like, and I wore Indian socks too. And he was like, "Hey, nice losing record to lead a division." I was like, "Oh, get out of here. Your team's trash."
But nice yeah, losing anyway. For the next 3 years.
But yeah, you know, they don't have enough of a lead to do anything resembling scheming like that. But
yeah.
I do like what Joel said about them trading for Norm because they so need to. They so badly need to. And I can't think of who it will be, but like my eye wanders towards the Baltimore Orioles, and I'm sure they have some kind of arm there.
Just they got to have one somewhere, right?
I mean, they have Brad Brock, who was good a year ago, and in MLB The Show helped me carry the Padres to a World Series.
Well, there you go. That's all you need.
I don't know. There's guys there too who might be good for at least for a year or so. Like, I know they were saying on Effectively Wild sometime in the last week or so. Like, it's easier probably to judge a reliever based on single year, like first half to second half, rather than over several years, because that's just not how relievers work. So there's guys like Richard Blyer who might be good. I don't know. 24 innings, he's allowed 25 hits and only 4 runs. That'd be nice to have, wouldn't it, Matt?
That'd be pretty nice. The problem is I don't think there's another Andrew Miller out there, and they need to replace Andrew Miller and Brian Shaw. I saw somewhere where I think it was Mike Hatterty said on Twitter that the Indians, they're not going to compete bullpen wise, so they might as well just go all in on like an outfielder and even the starter pitcher if they can. I kind of like that approach because they're not fixing the bullpen all the way to compete with like the Yankees bullpen or the Astros bullpen. So I mean, you just kind of forfeit that position and hope everything else succeeds. But we've seen so far that a bad bullpen can really ruin things.
Oh my God. It so can. But Mike Petriello tweeted today about the Astros fifth starter shutting down the league's hottest offense. And I literally had no concept of the Indians having a hot offense right now. You know, I see it,
yeah.
But because it's been so bad with them just tanking games because of the bullpen, you just didn't really notice it because it's hard to be happy with anything when everything when the last 3 innings of every game are a maze, to say the least. Is Andrew Miller going to hit the DL? Is that actually going to happen now?
I mean, I would think it's moved to his back now, so
Lord,
you don't just come back from that right away for a pitch.
Oh, he's got to do yoga.
When you're as long and lanky as Andrew Miller, you're going to be out for a little bit.
Oh, Lord, they're going to be so bad. Why has Zach McAllister gotten better? What's going on here?
Why has everybody else gotten worse?
Why has everyone gotten so bad? There was actually an interesting post on the Indians subreddit about the bullpen's pitch selection, which I found very interesting. I hate to bite the guy's flavor. I can't check Reddit on my work computer, though, so I can't tell you who wrote it. But it's there. But they've been throwing way more fastballs this year than in years past, which is interesting in an era where everyone hunts fastballs, which is why I'm excited for Tomlin being in the bullpen because he can't throw a fastball. So
so is that maybe a Carl Willis thing that he's trying to get?
That's what I'm wondering. It could be. He's definitely not a – I mean, I'm not saying definitely, but he's probably not as forward thing as someone like Mickey Callaway, maybe not. But, like, that's such a thing that the front office has to notice. Mm-hmm. And, like, as much autonomy as someone like – as Terry Francona has when compared to, say – I literally can't name the guy who just won the AJ Hinch, or whoever the manager of the Diamond, you know, any of those kind of pseudo faceless managers who are just like puppets of the front office, as is always talked about. Like, I feel like they have to have some sway over how things are decided, right? Like, that just makes sense to me.
Yeah, if the front office, I mean, I don't know. If it's Terry Francona, it's going to be a lot harder to...
Right,
like hold your leverage over him because he's Terry Francona, but
and if he's the one picking the pitching coach, and the pitching coach is the one having everyday conversations with the pitchers as opposed to whoever. Like I remember reading about the Pirates having a guy who was a front office guy, but he was always with the team, kind of creating a dialogue between the two, and he like would hang out with the pitchers and the team, and they got used to it over time. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know enough about the inner workings of the Indians themselves. Itself, the Indians itself, whatever. You know what I mean?
Themselves, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. They just need another pitcher. Who the hell is Oliver Drake? Jesus Christ.
He's Oliver Drake. Remember Evan Marshall? Throwback Thursday, Evan Marshall. Remember him?
Yeah. Do they make jerseys for the pro shop you can buy for some of these guys?
It's just like written in marker over Marshall's
drink. An Ollie Drake jersey.
They're going to sell it as like a Drake the Rapper jersey.
Dude, what happened to Evan Marshall? He was there for like a game.
They DFA'd him, and I think they signed him back to a minor league deal, so he's back now. Who's going to claim Evan Marshall? They were fine. They knew that.
They should trade for Manny Machado.
I don't think he's a good reliever, but I mean, they could try it. I wouldn't
he's
doubt.
He's got a good arm. And also, you know, whatever. I want 3 MVP candidates on the infield. 3.
Yeah, why not? Just get all of them and then...
Come on, screw it. Although, after reading that article about the mid-90s Indians, that's how they got themselves into trouble in the early 2000s, by trading all those prospects. So,
yeah.
What do I know?
Yeah, I mean, it's really neat. I mean, we're getting way off topic now, but it's neat that the Indians are where they are now without having such a hard rebuild like these other teams did.
Oh,
they weren't that bad between like 2007 and 2013.
They were, like, at worst, they were kind of shitty.
Yeah.
But like, and there were some bad, let's not get into it. There were some lean years in there. And I was thinking about this when reading about Josh Tomlin going to the bullpen and then Adam Plutko coming to the majors and Ryan Merritt healing up. I'm like, boy, just thinking back to the 2009 Indians with, I don't know, Jeremy Sowers and David Huff and Aaron Laffey going, man, they really find these guys.
And doesn't matter what year it is. Justin Masterson.
Oh, man. Well, oh, that was a good year. Cliff Lee was there for a while.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Cliff I like Cliff Lee. They should make it. They should bring him back, but younger. They should bring back the 29-year-old Cliff Lee.
Can you get do on that. The Indians? Can you just do that real quick?
Yeah, come on now. I mean, I'm convinced they have a cyborg building device, so come on.
Yeah. All right, Merritt. We've been talking for a while.
We're going to wrap it up. Right, right. All right.
Thanks for joining me again, and thanks, everybody, for listening.
Always wherever a pleasure.
You are. See you next week.